Accession number 20134, Reel 1.
Frank Claxton, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born in Norwich on the 19th November 1919. And as far as I can remember, my place of birth was Bartholomew Street in Norwich.
What did your father do for a living?
My father worked in the shoe industry. He was a foreman of the finishing department of several Bolton shoe factories in Norwich until he retired.
And where did you go to school?
Pardon?
Where did you go to school?
I went to St Mark's School. Oh, no, I started off as a junior at Surrey Street School, which was only about 20 yards from where I lived. And then when I became about 8 or 9, I moved to St Mark's School on Hall Road, which was about a mile away. And I was educated there until I was 14 and left school.
Did you get a job when you left school?
As soon as I left school, the first job that came along I had to take, because in those days the family needed the money.
What was the job?
Pushing a bicycle around the city delivering parcels.
Who for?
A Bolton shoe shop called Lennon's in London Street, Norwich.
Were you doing that until war broke out?
No. I did that for some time, and then they promoted me to assistant, third class, then again a second class assistant, then a first class assistant. But I got fed up with the being inside, you know, snivelling and grouping to people coming in, pressure for selling a pair of shoes and that sort of thing. And there was a firm that dealt in ropes and tents and sails and all that sort of thing, boot industry in Norwich. And I packed in and got a job with them. And I was out in the open there most of the time. We used to go out and put up tents, marquees for weddings and shows and that sort of thing. And we used to supply, we had a workshop where they made sails for yachts and used to splice rope and wires and all that sort of thing. In general, you know, more or less what we're saying, sort of thing you do in the Navy and things like that, with handling ropes and wires and yachts and things like that. And I was there until I was 20. And then the war broke out and I joined up.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war
on
Germany?
Yes, on a Sunday. I remember it was plain as anything. 11 o'clock on a Sunday morning, and the same evening we had an air raid warning, and everybody just went to their front doors and looked up in the sky to see if they could see the airplanes come over.
How did you feel about the news that war had been declared on Germany?
Well, I mean, it's going back some time now, but I thought, being 20 years old and all for it and that sort of thing, I felt that Hitler should be defeated. He invaded Poland, and I thought that we should go to war. I quite agreed with.
How did you go about joining up?
Well, I'd reached the age of 20, and conscription had come in. And at the age of 20, I was due to be called up for the army. I didn't want to go in the army. I'd been in working for this firm with all the ropes and things like that. So I said to myself, I don't want to go in the army, I want to go in the Navy. And to get in the Navy, I'd have to volunteer. So I went to the recruitment office and asked to join the Navy. But surprisingly, there was no vacancies. And I said, you can join the Marines. We got vacancies in the Marines, which is the same sort of thing. You train to fight on land and at sea, and you'd probably spend most of your time at sea. But you can only get in by joining for 12 years. So I had to make a decision. Either I got called up for the army as conscripted, or I joined the Marines for 12 years. So I joined the Marines for 12 years.
When was that?
That'd be when I was 20. That'd be around November 1939.
What happened to you next?
Well, after eventually, in the beginning of January, I get my call and lock papers to report to London to the Admiralty for a medical examination, and then to proceed on to Plymouth Barracks. The furthest I've ever been away from home at that time was down at the coast, which is about 15 miles away, and that was always one of the family. So to me, that was a great adventure. I had to leave Norwich overnight to get a train to get in London in time for my appointment, the first thing on the following morning, you see. And I passed my medical, and I was taken down to Paddington Station and put on a train down to Plymouth, to Stonehouse Barracks.
What happened once you got there?
When I got down to North Road Station in Plymouth, there was a lorry there with an NCO there, and they picked me up in the lorry, took me into the barracks. I always remember the first thing they gave me was an old, big old calico mattress, a cover. And they took me down to the straw shed, and they said, fill it up with straw, and so they end up, that's your mattress to sleep on. And those took up to a barrack room, where there's a lot more of the squad that I was going in, had all went in there. And there's these old iron beds, about 20 blokes in a room, old sliding iron beds, with just this palliasse on top of it, stuffed with straw, which you slept on. I mean, so by that time, that was lights out, that was, and we just slept, and then I reported the next morning, and started a training.
What was that like? What was the training like?
Oh, well, we started off, that was the usual drill. We'd done, about 6 months on the parade, nothing but drill all day long. Then we'd done a couple of months of field training, rifles, firing rifles and mortars and machine guns and everything like that, field craft. And then we'd done a couple of months of naval gunnery.
How did you take to the training?
Pardon?
How did you take to the training?
I don't really take to it. I was all for it.
Did you have any problems with it?
No, mine, that was hard. It was hard work. I mean, say, and the food wasn't what you call good, although there was ample of it, but to me, that was rubbish. I was just spending most of my pay in the nappy buying meat pies and things like that.
Why did you think it was rubbish? What was it?
Well, to what I'd been used to. Mind you, the quality of the food, the vitamins might have been there and that sort of thing, but how that was dished up and things like that, that was every man for himself, more or less. They weren't none of this self-catering like there is in the forces now. There was a blooming great dining halls of about 100 people, and they used to come out with your plate, and there would be one slap of little spuds on there, and all some peas on there, and a bit of stew on there, like that, and that was your lot.
How were you treated by the people in charge of the training?
Well, they hold it, or should I say fair, but the Marines were noted for their discipline, weren't they? And discipline was the whole thing, whether you just did what you were told, no questions answered. If they told you to do a thing, you'd done it, whether you thought that was right or wrong, you just done it.
Did you get into trouble?
No. No, never. No.
What happened next?
Then, after I'd finished my training and passed out and everything, I was So after to HMS Repulse.
Where did you find the ship?
The ship was in Scapa Flow. And I had to travel from Plymouth to Scapa Flow, which took 2.5 days to get there. And there was three of us, and one of them was Marine Garner.
This is the gentleman who told me about you.
And I always remember we travelled from Plymouth up to London. We got in, I think we travelled up overnight from Plymouth to London, and we had to get from Paddington to King's Cross to get a train up to either Glasgow or Edinburgh. And we had about 4 or 5 hours wait in London for the train. And I always remember because I'd never seen London or anything nor the others. And we were walking through London with all our kit and the pack and everything all ready to go to the Repulse. And we were down by the Houses of Parliament. And we walked through this park and the air raid sirens went. And there was a man walking through the park. To us, everybody was like running to the air raid shelters. And this man said to us three, "Come on, you young men, you get down the air raid shelters." So being buckled up, you get down there. And after he'd gone, we realised that was Neville Chamberlain, the Prime Minister. We kind of made the face seem familiar, and that was Neville Chamberlain. He told us to get down the area, so we told him, bugger off. But in any case, we go across to Paddington, to King's Cross, and we make our way up to Edinburgh, and then anyway, it changed there, and that was a single line track. From there, we had to go up to Thurzall in Scotland. And then from Thurzall, we had to wait for a ferry to take us to the Pentland Firth, up into the Orkney Islands, up to Scapa Flow, to pick up a ship. And it took 2.5 days.
Which month was this that you joined?
That would be about September 1940.
Had you been in any bombing before this?
Had you been in
any bombing before?
Oh yes, Plymouth was heavily blitzed when I was down there. In the Blitz of Plymouth, yes.
What do you remember of the bombing in Plymouth?
The Marine Barracks got hit, and then all around Union Street, which was near the barracks, was flattened. And we just carried on. They had underneath the parade ground at the barracks, there were tunnels, air raid shelters. We used to have to go down there, or if we went on, you know, sentry duty or anything like that. But there was quite a lot of air raids during the time I was at Plymouth.
Did any bombs fall near you? Did any bombs fall near you?
Yes, so the barracks actually got hit.
Were there casualties?
Well, as far as I don't really know. I imagine they were. I can't really say. But I know we used to spend quite a lot of time during the night in the air raid shelters, and because we hadn't had a lot of sleep and we were in training, they used to give us a couple of hours off in the afternoon. You know, we used to finish the training a bit early because we were up half the night and also training during the day.
How did public morale stand up to the bombing in Plymouth?
Well, I think I stood up quite well. Yeah.
Did you have any duties clearing up rubble or anything like
that? No, we were all basically training all the while. But of course, we weren't in Plymouth after initial training in Plymouth Barracks itself. We were out to Cantlemount in Cornwall, you know, field training and up the Naval School, and all. We were all different places. But the morale seemed pretty good in Plymouth.
What impression did HMS Repulse make on you once you got to Scapa?
Oh, she was then. As we reached the Repulse, they were hauling the anchor in, ready to go to sea. And the ship was, when we got aboard, the ship was actually moving. You know, slowly moving. There we go. And as soon as I got aboard the Repulse, I was allocated a locker and told a mess, 36 mess it was, on the Repulse. And as soon as you go to sea, you're into two watches straight away, port and starboard. And there's always one watch on duty. And I was detailed off to go to the 15-inch shell room at the bottom of the ship. I was on the starboard watch, and my first watch would be the middle watch at midnight to four. Never been on a ship before. There's 1,500 people on board. The ship, 800 foot long, weighing 32,000 ton. Never knew anybody. And then had to go down below for the middle watch in the shell room. 15-inch shells, all hydraulic grabs and everything. Absolutely frightening it was. And being about four or five decks below water, every movement of the ship seemed to creak. You know, there was a mind you, I wasn't there one of them. There was about six of us in the shell room to get the shells into the lift that goes up to the gun number, three or four decks higher up. That was my first case of sea life.
What did you do on that watch?
You just had to be there in case of action. Didn't have to do anything, you just had to be there ready in case of immediate action. You were there to get the shells up to the guns, although the guns were already loaded, but you had to be there until the remainder, the other half, could get there and help you out.
So did you just sit on a chair or something?
No, there was no chairs. That was all the shell room where the shells were. That was, it was all oil, because it was all hydraulics, and the deck was all just an iron deck. You just had to be there. There was all these hydraulic grabs and levers, and because the shells weighed a ton, you just had to put the grab on the shell and hoist up and go into the cage that took it up to the guns. You just had to be there. You didn't have to do anything. You just had to be there in case of emergency.
So you mean there was oil on the floor? There was oil on the floor?
Yes, yeah, argaline oil from the hydraulics and all that sort of thing. The mess all wet, you know, and might have been condensation, might have been, it was a hell of a state.
Was it slippery?
Yeah.
So you just stood about for the 4 hours of the
Yeah, morning? Yeah, you just had to be there.
Were you just, what did you do? Did you just talk to each other? Or
just
what?
Talk to each other, yeah, things like that, yeah.
What type of things would you talk about?
Well, civil life and, you know, what you do during the war and what you would do if the ship got sunk and all that sort of thing, and you were trapped down below and all that sort of thing, and just play cards.
Was there a table?
Well, you put the cards out anywhere on a shell or something. The shells are that size. Anything pass the time away.
Who was the senior person in charge?
I think I was probably a corporal. I don't remember now. I'd say this is 50 years ago, isn't it?
Were you all Marines?
All Marines, yeah, because the whole turret was completely manned by Marines. The gun, the magazine, and the shell room. The whole lot, which was about 50 men, I suppose, all together, the whole lot, were all manned by Marines. There were three turrets on the Repulse. Two were manned by seamen, one was manned by Marines. And the Marines also managed, we had 4.4-inch guns as well, they also managed them, because John Garner, he was on the 4.4-inch, and I was in the 15-inch.
What was the name of your turret?
B turret. There's A, B, and Y turret.
Could you go to the toilet when you were on watch?
Did what?
Could you go to the toilet when you were on watch?
Toilet? You peed in a bucket. Over the side.
If you were down there, could you throw things over the side down there?
No, you peed in a bucket, and then you took it up when you were...
Could you eat things when you were on watch? Eat and drink?
No, you had your meals when you finished. You've done 4 hours on and 4 hours off. When you finished, say 12 o'clock, you're on from 8 o'clock in the morning till 12. At 12 o'clock you come and then you have your dinner. Then you're off then till 4 o'clock, and you went back at 4 till 8. Then when you finished 8 o'clock, you had your supper or your evening meal. Then you went on again at midnight till 4 in the morning. And had to go around, you see.
Could you sleep properly in the ship?
Well, yeah, you were dead always tired. every spare minute you had, you had what they call a cork or a piece of matting like that, which you should lay on the floor or on the mess stools and have half an hour's sleep.
Did you sleep in a hammock?
Yeah.
Was it comfortable?
Yeah, once you got used to it.
Was there a problem slinging the hammock?
No. No problems. You got issue. You had a hammock and two blankets. No sheets. That was that. No pillow. You were never issue with a pillow. You had to make do with something for a pillow. Roll up your jacket, something like that, and stick it behind your head.
What was discipline like in the repulse?
Strict. You had to. Had to be. Everybody had to know his job.
How did the Marines get on with the officers?
As far as I know, we had three Marine officers, a Captain of Marines and two Lieutenants. The Captain of Marines was in charge of the whole lot, and the two Lieutenants, one was in charge of the starboard watch and one was in charge of the port watch.
Was food any better in the repulse than it had been in Devonport?
Yes, the food on the ship, on board the ship, was better than what it was in barracks. But then, it varied, because if you were at sea a long time, they ran short of certain things. Like if you were at sea for about a month, they ran out short of potatoes, things like that. So they used to revert to rice and things like that. And, they couldn't just go down to the corner shop and get things. And the first ones, if there was a shortage of anything, the first ones to suffer was the ratings before the officers. I mean, it all depended, the food, like, we'd do an Atlantic convoy, and we'd go across to Canada, and going to Halifax in Nova Scotia. They never knew the war was on. You'd get all the supplies you wanted. Then they'd load up ship with everything. You go down to Freetown in West Africa, the supplies would go shop. You'd get bananas, oranges, fruit, and all that sort of thing, which you'd buy in, you see, which you couldn't get in England. So you food varied. It all depended where you were and what supplies the officer in charge of feeding you, the pay officer, could buy, you see. If you'd done a lot of trips abroad, well, you fed better than what you did if you were in home waters all the while. Because if you were in home waters, you relied on what you could get from your base. And of course, I mean to say, as far as meat and that was concerned, they had plenty of fridges and all that sort of thing, you know, for meat and loads and loads of tinned stuff. But as far as fresh vegetables and things like that were concerned, it depended upon where you were and what the supply officer could get. But it was mostly herrings in tomato sauce for breakfast, baked beans or something like that. It was mostly tinned stuff. They had a bakery aboard. We used to bake bread and cake. You used to get your piece of cake on a Sunday, which was your Sunday tea, piece of cake.
What kind of cake?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
What kind of cake was it? What kind of cake was it?
Oh, just ordinary cake with food, currants and sultanas in it. You got a slice of cake.
How did the Marines get on with each other?
Well, all right. See, 90% of the time you never saw half of them because they were on duty when you were off, and when you were on duty, they're and. The Marines, we had two mess decks. Oh no, that's on the personnel. See, half the Marines were on watch while the other were off. Then when you were on watch, the others were off, you see. So half the bunch, you hardly knew them because you never saw them, only when you were in harbour or things like that. But they seemed to get on all right. You had to.
Was it a happy ship for you?
It was a happy ship for me, yeah. I caught in, you know, I got on there quite all right.
So, when you first joined Repulse, what duties did the ship have?
We were in a convoy most of the time.
Where to?
In the North Atlantic convoys. And then we used to do quite a lot of convoys down from Scapa Flow to Freetown in West Africa. Well, then when they got as far as Freetown, that was considered safe for the convoys to go where they to South Africa or Australia or anywhere where they were going. That was the danger part for them. And we'd be up Scapa Flow in the middle of the winter. Great coats, duffel coats, you know, freezing cold. And we'd pick up a convoy and go down to Freetown, West Africa. So we left on the Sunday. On the Monday, we'd be down somewhere around the Plymouth area. It wouldn't be so cold, so you took your duffel coats off. On Tuesday, you'd be round the Bay of Biscay. You didn't want a coat, so you were just in uniform. On Wednesday, you'd be down off somewhere off Africa. You were in semi-tropical gear. On the Friday, you'd be down in Freetown, West Africa, you'd be in shorts and shirts because you were near the equator. You'd be there for 24 hours and then you'd turn around again and go back to England, and that was the other way round. And after a fortnight, you'd be back up in Scotland again with duffel coats and freezing cold.
How did you like doing convoy work? Did you like doing convoy work?
Well, it was just a matter of routine. We had no choice, did we? The ship was just detailed up to pick up a convoy and take them. So we used to go halfway, you know, the camp across the, you know, in the convoys, backwards and forwards. We used to go halfway, and then a ship from Canada would come and take them, and then we'd bring another one back in England and that sort of thing.
Before the ship got sunk, were you in any action before?
We chased the Bismarck. When the Bismarck got somewhere in that action, and we were actually lucky to get away with it, I think, because we ran out of oil and we had to leave the fleet we were with and make our own way to Conception Bay in Newfoundland for oil and to get some oil. And so the saying go, I don't know, that during the night we actually passed the Bismarck and neither of us saw each other. If they'd have seen us, they'd have probably blown us out of the water because we could only go about 5 or 6 knots because we never had the oil. We just had enough oil to get us to Conception Bay in Newfoundland to keep the Indians ticking over and get us till we could get a tanker.
What do you remember about going ashore from Repulse?
Well, we never got a lot ashore leave. Most of the time we went.